So for the next question, it's more about the how. Mm-hmm. I think we covered a little bit of what the problem is, where the source comes from. So let's talk a little bit about the how. And by all means, I know you have fabulous examples on how you've gone about it. How do we go about busting or unlearning some of those biases? Yes, let's go deep into the how. So I'll pass over to you again.
We always start, when we want to learn about the how, get into the how of fixedness, we'll all start by bringing awareness to it. As I said, it's not something people are aware of. So as I said, there'll be riddles and exercises and so on, just to help people understand what it's all about. We then close in the world and zoom in to get inside that box and work with what we've got. One of the key words in the name of our company and the methodology is systematic. We could just brainstorm, as some do, and play around with some ideas. We're actually convinced that working systematically through those resources is going to be far more efficient, okay, as a fixedness buster, but also as a way of generating ideas. So what we do is we apply a process that is counterintuitive. And that is we work from form to function. Okay. We create a solution and we work out what problems it would be solving. Okay. Now this in itself, this function follows form, as we call it, is a way of pulling things apart in a counterintuitive way. You wouldn't naturally do that. And in fact, many methods are working from an insight or a problem and then solving it. We are solution probleming. Now, that already is super. Now, what you're probably left wondering is, well, what are you doing? How are you doing this? SRT is based on patterns. I mentioned that I was a dot joiner and I love patterns. And I've embraced this pattern-based creative thinking as one of, I guess, a powerful part of my tool set and something that I'm sharing with the entrepreneurs and some in Australia, as you know. I lost my train of thought.
because I think with the how.
The patterns. Patterns. Quickly on the patterns. So where's SRT come from? Very quickly, there was a marine engineer, Altshuler, who was looking at engineering patents. And he realized that there was a DNA to innovation, which was a huge discovery, a fascinating idea, and really not what we usually think about innovation. We tend to see innovation as something that is an art, certainly not something that is repetitive or that is replicating itself. And I think this was really a novel concept. And what he developed was what we call TRIZ, 40 templates that really, he said, made up, pretty much accounted for all the great ideas in engineering. Two academics who then became the founders of SIT looked at this and then worked on products and solutions and kept working with the same hypothesis that these patterns could be reverse engineered into tools to create fantastic ideas. And that was really the groundwork for SIT, and it's the core set of our tools. There are many others, and then we work with facilitation and so on. But what was really interesting was to say, okay, if I give you, Jeanette, one of these five patterns that we've identified, then you will have an existing situation, whatever you're talking to me about, any product, process, and so on, and you'll apply one of these tools. And by applying it, you are going to work, function follows form, and come to something counterintuitive. You're going to unearth something you wouldn't have otherwise unearthed. Let's think of some examples.
Give us maybe more than one example of how you've used that to unearth something that you wouldn't have expected.
Sure. So let's just go some of our historical examples that we love to show. Philips used one of the tools, which is subtraction. Now, subtraction is pretty much as it sounds. The pattern that we've observed in subtraction is that something essential, something that was considered essential to the existing situation, to the product, the service that you had initially, has been removed. Now, Philips, of course, developed DVD players. Initially, they had a fixed mindset about what a DVD player looked like and about the big block they had for the videos that some people might remember. And so the cassettes that we used to put in there, and they had a whole shape in their mind, and they were able to slowly just subtract those things. And that was a beautiful sort of example of subtraction. Apple is our pet company for subtraction. They're constantly, without using SIT necessarily, they're constantly harnessing that pattern. And we see that in the iPod that became the Shuffle, whereby they took away not only the screen, but our choice of music, which would not have come from the customer insight. It comes from this incredible ability to say, we're going to take something essential away, and in fact, we'll realize that there is a problem that is solving, or rather a need that is meeting, which is or just, show, just those people who want something small for running and so on, who are not going to be looking at the screen and who like the random side of it and so on and so on. So we know the advantages of Shuffle and why it was such a success. More recently, Apple Pods. You know, we've taken everything away because we don't want the cords and so on and so on. We're seeing why that particular pattern can be so powerful and how it's being used around us. In our business, SIT has worked with their problem was simple. It wasn't simple actually. They were taking a very sizable mainframe out to sea in a water and gas manifold, it's called. And they were taking them out to their sites, and their approach was to lease a big ship that cost $960,000 a day, and they'd take it out for 85 days, rig it, de-rig it, and so on. And I think, like most clients, they were convinced that it was a pretty good process, but they were open to exploring it in an innovative way. Now, we applied subtraction to this process. So we had a pair who were working on the ship. And first we start, in any situation, we start with the existing world, and we divvy out the resources. We say, you've got the barges, and you've got the people, and you've got the ships, and you've got... And one of the pairs had the ship. And, of course, we had fixedness in that pair, because they were looking at the ship saying, why are we even doing this exercise? This is silly. We're wasting our time. Let's get back to the office. You know, up against their resistance and fixedness. And this is what we're seeing in organizations all the time. They weren't being, they were blind to the possibilities, which is what fixedness is all about. Now, we systematically took them through a process whereby they were, I'll use the word forced, but let's say instructed, facilitated to take out the ship. And when they did, at first there were no solutions, and then as you work it through in a systematic way, they came up with, well, we can't leave it as is, as we can in subsubtractions. However, we can apply what we call a task unification, another of the tools, another of the patterns, whereby we're going to give a new task to an existing resource. They turned to the barges and said, we're going to take the manifold out on a barge and sink it. Now, they went from a process that cost 50 to 60 million to one that was more like 50,000. So this is what we're seeing constantly. This is this fixed mindset of smart people, and we take them into a room and give them a different search engine.
Now, that's fabulous. So just to paraphrase a little bit on the how that we just covered, you covered probably first of all, very importantly, number one is awareness. Number two, it's work in the closed-in world. But number three, be very systematic about the way you go about it. You also share with us a little bit of the background on SIT and where the DNA of innovation came from, and some of that academic research that actually explained the patterns that happened with some of the most revolutionary great inventions that we had in engineering. And then you cover quite a few really great examples around subtraction. So you share with us some examples from Philips. That is probably the most drastic example of taking something that is perceived to be so essential in the process that when you force people to think differently, alternatives that people would have never thought about come through. So thank you so much for sharing. I'm just sort of you know, paraphrasing some of the what you just covered, how have you gone about actually getting people to really challenge their own biases and unlearning a lot of that? I just want to get into a little sort of that next level down of detail before we go into the last question.
I think it's there would be many ways of approaching unlearning. And I think some people would be saying, stay curious and give a few maybe motherhood statements about how to do it. As I've started to share, the method that I'm bringing to entrepreneurs is all about working through what you have systematically in a counterintuitive way. And this accidental approach, it's the post-it approach. We create a glue that doesn't stick well. We then decide what could it be good for. This approach is, by its nature, busting fixedness. Okay, so I don't sit with people and say, we're now going to unlearn. I don't even necessarily say to them, as we work through a tool, I'm going to bust your fixedness. Although, as I said, I certainly will bring awareness to fixedness very soon. But what they're realizing as they're working with any of these five and other of the tools is that they are discovering and unearthing, as I said before, things they weren't unearthing before. I remember running a customer workshop, and one of our concerns was to get this customer in our value chain. They were a very important client in Bayer. And we ran an SIT workshop with them, and we were concerned about protecting our margin, our premium. Now, that we realized during the workshop that was less of a concern to them and far more important to us. And that was a bit naive on our part. But what was really interesting was to use one of the tools I've alluded to, task unification. Now, we said zooming in on specific situations. For example, we were saying we deliver product in trucks to our clients. And we were saying, let's have a think about that closed world of the delivery process. And let's have a think about how we could use that process to also protect the premium for our product. Okay, so we assigned a task to a process or to elements of that process. Now, we then had each group looking at how the trucks could do it, how the actual delivery could do it. And they came up with ideas of, for example, bringing other value-add services when they're delivering the product. So taking away waste, these sorts of things. So just trying to think about what could be within that service or process that could be fostering more loyalty for the product. Okay, or giving it more value or encouraging customers to pay more for it. Okay, so those are the sorts of examples. These experiences. So once again, they are almost unlearning without realizing in this accidental way. But I'm not explicitly saying now it's time to unlearn. And I think that's what's interesting. Now, what we do though is I think it's very powerful in any workshop, be it a results-driven workshop or a skills-driven workshop, to use what we call metacognition. So there is, I think it's important to be pausing occasionally and saying, what do we understand about what we've just done, and do some thinking about the thinking. So we do that. And generally what the group will play back is, I didn't realize that. Or I've woken up to, or I've had insights about this, and this. Okay. Yeah. So they're playing it back to you, but you're not there pushing at it. And in fact, I think that's the best way not to get resistance.
Okay. No, I love it, Reg. I think sometimes even just making the space and the time and giving people permission to just pause and think about the thinking. And I love how you talked about these way that you systematically really are using an accidental approach to get people to unearth different things through the different methodologies. I think that's provided a lot more detail and depth to what we're talking about. So now, thank you for that.
It might be helpful, Jeanette, to just say what the other three tools are. I've mentioned two.
So yes, by all means, take us through a couple more of the tools.
Sure. So I mentioned that the five patterns we used are used in a certain systematic way. And they're used, as I mentioned, as from function, form to function. Function follows form. Now, what this looks like, as I said, is an existing situation, then the use of a tool, a manipulation of some sort, and then what you're left with is what we call a virtual product or a virtual process. This is where the unlearning takes place. This is where we are up against people's fixedness, and this is where we then take them through a facilitated approach. And I keep saying that word facilitation because I guess I'm trying to really say, we don't just say, oh, is that a good idea, and then bounce off and on. It's not that. It's got to be very structured. So then we'll say, you know, for whom could there be a benefit? How could it work? In what situation could this be beneficial? And this is how we tease out specific ideas. With a procurement company, for example, we're working on with division. Now, division is something we see quite a lot, and particularly in processes where we can see that something, a step has been moved in time or place. And we thought that the process could only look a certain way, and in fact, it's been moved. Now, there's something we do all the time when we take an aeroplane we don't even think about now, whereby the process used to be we'd go to the travel agent, we'd buy our ticket, it would be sent to us, so we'd pick it up, then we'd go out to the airport, and then we'd queue up, and we'd check in, and so on and so on. Now, of course, today, we check in online. We've shuffled the process. That online moment is taking place, or the check-in moment is taking place at a different time. And as we go forward, we'll see that hotels are going to basically send us our key before we've even left our home, and so on and so on. There'll be many experiences like that where everything will shuffle. And this is a pattern. So we apply that very thinking, and indeed have with procurement, which is a very, very fixed group, and for good cause, they're trying to protect the funds. But, you know, when you take step 10 of one of their processes and put it at the top and then say, and then watch their fixedness in action and their resistance, and then say, okay, now let's imagine how this could work, for whom this could be useful. And then you see these people say, well, in fact, for a certain group of suppliers, we could incentivize them in this way, and yes, we could pay them up front, and so on. It would be possible, you know, and you see that they can come out with some new idea and innovative approach to work with a partner that they would not have otherwise come up with. So division's beautiful, particularly for processes. And usually at the end of a workshop, when people say, what can I do now? I would say to them, write out 10 steps, and without thinking, without pre-thinking, preempting the results, move a step randomly, and then go through a function follows form thinking, and really challenge yourself on, you know, what could that be good for? How could it work? What value does it bring? What you'll see is that sometimes even steps fall out. And I remember in Bayer, our head of regulatory standing up and saying, I've just taken a 16-step process to 4 steps. You know, we see this often. So that's division, beautiful. Task unification, I mentioned, by the way, Sam Sonnet did some beautiful stuff there, whereby they harnessed the weight of college school backpacks and said, well, no, we're going to actually look at how that could be one of the resources we can use. And they ended up loading the shiatsu points on the shoulders and in the back. So in fact, they were using one of the resources in a positive way, and they designed their bags in a certain way to actually give you a positive benefit. Pearson Education was a big client of SIT's, and they used another of the patterns, which is multiplication. Now, multiplication is the observation that something has been copied, a component of a product or a service has been copied and then changed. Now, one of the cute examples of this is a razor blade, a razor we buy in the shops, whereby each time, maybe Gillette and other brands, you know, each time they launch a new razor, they've added another razor blade. And in fact, it's oriented slightly differently to give you that closer shave. And that's a nice example. But in fact, we see once again in processes, in medicine particularly, we're seeing that multiplication can be brilliant. For example, if I can't get to the scene of an accident fast with my ambulance, I can possibly send first aid straight out with a motorbike. Now, the motorbike isn't multiplied but changed, copied but changed version of the ambulance, but able to provide that first care, point of care. So multiplication is being used a great deal. With police cars and speed cameras and so on, we're seeing cardboard cutouts of police cars on the side of the road, just as a copy but changed version of the police car that, of course, is going to slow you down because you're going to think it's a real car. They're used all over the place. Beautiful place. And then another one that we love and that we're seeing the banks are using a lot, once again, sometimes with us. We've been working with some beautiful banks in Colombia and Israel in particular, and hopefully very soon here in Australia. But without even thinking, they're using what's called attribute dependency. Very strange name, but attribute dependency is quite simply where two variables have been linked up that had no connection to each other before. The example we love to give of that is pink cabs, where we didn't used to have any connection between the driver, the gender of the driver and the gender of the passenger, whereas now we do. And we have these pink cabs that make women feel safe, and they're pink to give you a clear signal of this is a safe cab for you. Beautiful sort of connection. Now, in the banking area that I mentioned, there's a beautiful example, and there are many, and a great example of attribute dependency, which is whereby new mothers with young babies were given a break in their mortgage. So a few months just break when they just came home with a baby. Now, no one was kidding themselves, but you can see how that was a beautiful sort of benefit, a lovely value proposition to people who just needed to spend their focus their time and their money on a baby. And that was a new connection between the age of the child or the stage of a family and the price they'll pay their mortgage or the amount they need to pay in their mortgage. So these were really lovely, novel ideas.
Oh, wonderful. Great. So now thanks for elaborating. I'll just paraphrase some of the tools that you've just taken us all through. So you took us through the division methodology, where you basically just remove a step and you use some great examples on probably some of the toughest people that sometimes we need to get along in the journey of what we're doing with innovation, like procurement teams, in terms of steps and challenging the steps you need. You also talked about task unification. And really, you share with us the example with the school backpacks. I am a mother of two teenage daughters now, so I can totally see how that could certainly make a difference to their health, really, long term anyway. Multiplication, you cover as well, where, you brought us to life some really, as basic examples as it could be, that perception that there might be another police car there, even if it's just that. But look, on the distance, even if it's just a cardboard copy thing, you can see how it would impact people just thinking that there's something there. And of course, the last one with attribute dependency. So it's great to get a better understanding of all the tools available. So when we talk about unlearning, and busting the way the way that everything that we've learned and the things that we assume and the way we behave can be busted in a much more systematic way. I think that's one of the key things, that this is not just random. This is not just let's sit down and have a conversation about how we look at things differently. There's a very clear way of looking at it.